Section 2. Costs of Storage. Cost of circulation, which originate in a mere change of form of value, in circulation ideally considered, do not enter into the value of commodities. The parts of capital expended as such costs are merely deductions from the productively expended capital, so far as the capitalist is concerned. The costs of circulation, which we shall consider now, are of a different nature. They may arise from processes of production which are only continued in circulation, the productive character of which is hence merely concealed by the circulation form. On the other hand, they may be, from the standpoint of society, mere costs, unproductive expenditure of living or materialized labor. But for that very reason, they become productive of value for the individual capitalist, may constitute an addition to the selling price of his commodities. This already follows from the fact that these costs are different in different spheres of production, and here and there, even for different individual capitals in one and the same sphere of production. By being added to the prices of commodities, they are distributed in proportion to the amount to be borne by each individual capitalist. But all labour, which adds value, can also add surplus value, and will always add surplus value under capitalist production, as the value created by labour depends on the amount of the labour itself, whereas the surplus value created by it depends on the extent to which the capitalist pays for it. Consequently, costs which enhance the price of a commodity without adding to its use value, which therefore are to be classed as unproductive expenses, so far as society is concerned, may be a source of enrichment to the individual capitalist. On the other hand, as this addition to the price of the commodity merely distributes these costs of circulation equally, they do not thereby cease to be unproductive in character. For instance, insurance companies divide the losses of individual capitalists among the capitalist class, but this does not prevent these equalized losses from remaining losses so far as the aggregate social capital is concerned. Section 2A. Formation of Supply in General. During its existence as commodity capital, or its stay in the market, in other words, during the interval between the process of production from which it emerges and the process of consumption into which it enters, the product constitutes a commodity supply. As a commodity in the market and therefore in the shape of a supply, commodity capital figures in a dual capacity in each circuit. One time, as the commodity product of that capital in process whose circuit is being examined, the other time, however, as the commodity product of another capital, which must be available in the market to be bought and converted into productive capital. It is indeed possible that this last-named commodity capital is not produced until ordered. In that event, an interruption occurs until it has been produced. But the flow of the process of production and reproduction requires that a certain mass of commodities, means of production, should always be in the market, should therefore form a supply. Productive capital likewise comprises the purchase of labour power, and the money form is here only the value form of the means of subsistence, the greater part of which the labourer must find at hand in the market. We shall discuss this more in detail further on in this paragraph. But at this point, the following is already clear. As far as concerns capital value in process, which has been transformed into a commodity and must now be sold or reconverted into money, which therefore functions for the moment as commodity capital in the market, the condition in which it constitutes a supply is to be described as an inexpedient, involuntary stay there. The quicker the sale is effected, the more smoothly runs the process of reproduction. Delay in the form of conversion of increased commodity to increased money impedes the real exchange of matter, which must take place in the circuit of capital, as well as its further functioning as productive capital. On the other hand, so far as money to commodity is concerned, the constant presence of commodities in the market, commodity supply, appears as a condition of the flow of the process of reproduction and of the investment of new or additional capital. The abidance of the commodity capital as a commodity supply in the market requires buildings, stores, storage places, warehouses, in other words, an expenditure of constant capital. Furthermore, the payment of labour power for placing the commodities in storage. Besides, commodities spoil and are exposed to the injurious influences of the elements. Additional capital must be invested, partly in instruments of labour in material form, and partly in labour power, to protect the commodities against the above. Footnote. Corbett calculates, in 1841, that the cost of storing wheat for a season of 9 months amounts to a loss of 0.5% in quantity, 3% for interest on the price of wheat, 2% for warehouse rental, 1% for sifting and drayage, 0.5% for delivery, together 7%, or 3 6d, on a price of 50 shillings per quarter. Thomas Corbett, An Inquiry into the Causes and Modes of Wealth of Individuals, etc., London, 1841. According to the testimony of Liverpool merchants before the Railway Commission, the net costs of grain storage in 1865 amounted to about 2d per quarter per month, or 9d or 10d a ton. Royal Commission on Railways, 1867. Evidence. End of footnote. Thus, the existence of capital in its form of commodity capital, and hence of commodity supply, gives rise to costs which must be classed as costs of circulation, since they do not come within the sphere of production. These costs of circulation differ from those mentioned under Section 1 by the fact that they enter to a certain extent into the value of the commodities, that is, they increase the price of commodities. At all events, the capital and labour power which serve the need of preserving and storing the commodity supply are withdrawn from the direct process of production. On the other hand, the capitals thus employed, including labour power as a constituent of capital, must be replaced out of the social product. Their expenditure has, therefore, the effect of diminishing the productive power of labour, so that a greater amount of capital and labour is required to obtain a particular useful effect. They are unproductive costs. As the costs of circulation necessitated by the formation of a commodity supply are due merely to the time required for the conversion of existing values from the commodity form into the money form, hence merely to the particular social form of the production process, that is, are due only to the fact that the product is brought forth as a commodity and must therefore undergo the transformation into money, these costs completely share the character of the circulation costs enumerated under Section 1. On the other hand, the value of the commodities is here preserved or increased only because the use value, the product itself, is placed in definite material conditions, which cost capital outlay, and is subjected to operations which bring additional labour to bear on the use values. However, the computation of the values of commodities, the bookkeeping incidental to this process, the transactions of purchase and sale, do not affect the use value in which the commodity value exists. They have to do only with the form of the commodity value. Although, in the case submitted, that is, as per Corbett's calculations given in the last footnote, the costs of forming a supply, which is here done involuntarily, arise only from a delay in the change of form and from its necessity, still these costs differ from those mentioned under Section 1, in that their purpose is not a change in the form of the value, but the preservation of the value existing in the commodity as a product, a utility, and which cannot be preserved in any other way than by preserving the product, the use value, itself. The use value is neither raised nor increased here. On the contrary, it diminishes. But its diminution is restricted, and it is preserved. Neither is the advanced value contained in the commodity increased here, but new labour, materialised and living, is added. We have now to investigate furthermore to what extent these costs arise from the peculiar nature of commodity production in general, and from commodity production in its general absolute form, that is, capitalist commodity production, and to what extent, on the other hand, they are common to all social production, and merely assume a special shape, a special form of appearance, in capitalist production. Adam Smith entertained the splendid notion that the formation of a supply was a phenomenon peculiar to capitalist production. More recent economists, for instance Lahler, insist on the contrary that it declines with the development of capitalist production. See J. Lahler, Money and Morals, a book for the Times, London, 1852. Sismondi even regards it as one of the drawbacks of the latter. See J.C.L. Sismond de Sismondi, Études sur l'économie politique, Volume 1, Brussels, 1837. As a matter of fact, supplies exist in three forms: in the form of productive capital, in the form a fund for individual consumption, and in the form of a commodity supply, or commodity capital. The supply in one form decreases relatively when it increases in another, although its quantity may increase absolutely in all three forms simultaneously. It is plain from the outset that wherever production is carried on for the direct satisfaction of the needs of the producer, and only to a minor extent for exchange or sale, hence where the social product does not assume the form of commodities at all, or only to a rather small degree, the supply in the form of commodities, or commodity supply, forms only a small and insignificant part of wealth. But here, the consumption fund is relatively large, especially that of the means of subsistence proper. One need but take a look at old-fashioned peasant economy. There, the overwhelming part of the product is transformed directly into supplies of means of production, or means of subsistence, without becoming supplies of commodities, for the very reason that it remains in the hands of its owner. It does not assume the form of a commodity supply, and for this reason, Adam Smith declares that there is no supply in societies based on this mode of production. He confuses the form of the supply with the supply itself, and believes that society hitherto lived from hand to mouth, or trusted to the hap of the morrow. This is a naive misunderstanding. Footnote: Adam Smith, An Inquiry into the Nature and Causes of the Wealth of Nations, a new edition in 4 volumes, London, 1843. Volume 2, Introduction. End of footnote. A supply in the form of productive capital exists in the shape of means of production, which already are in the process of production, or at least in the hands of the producer, hence latently already in the process of production. It was seen previously that with the development of the productivity of labour, and therefore also with the development of the capitalist mode of production, there is a steady increase in the mass of means of production, buildings, machinery, etc., which are embodied once and for all in the process, in the form of instruments of labour, and perform with steady repetition their function in it for a longer or shorter time. It was also observed that this increase is at the same time the premise and consequence of the development of the social productive power of labour. The growth, not only absolute but relative, of wealth in this form is characteristic above all of the capitalist mode of production. Footnote. Instead of a supply arising only upon and from the conversion of the product into a commodity, and of the consumption supply into a commodity supply, as Adam Smith wrongly imagines, this change of form, on the contrary, causes most violent crises in the economy of the producers during the transition from production for one's own needs to commodity production. In India, for instance, quote, "The disposition to hoard largely the grain for which little could be got in years of abundance," unquote, was observed until very recent times. House of Commons return, Bengal and Orissa famine. The sudden increase in the demand for cotton, jute, etc., due to the American Civil War, led in many parts of India to a severe restriction of rice culture, a rise in the price of rice, and a sale of the producers' old rice supplies. To this must be added the unexampled export of rice to Australia, Madagascar, etc., after 1864-66. This accounts for the acute character of Orissa alone, where the, quote, "drain of old stocks," unquote, is emphasized as one of the causes of the famine. End of footnote. The material forms of existence of constant capital, the means of production, do not, however, consist only of such instruments of labour, but also of materials of labour in various stages of processing, and of auxiliary materials. With the enlargement of the scale of production and the increase in the productive power of labour through cooperation, division of labour, machinery, etc., grows the quantity of raw materials, auxiliary materials, etc., entering into the daily process of reproduction. These elements must be ready at hand in the place of production. The volume of this supply, existing in the form of productive capital, increases therefore absolutely. In order that the process may keep going, apart from the fact whether this supply can be renewed daily or only at fixed intervals, there must always be a greater accumulation of ready raw material, etc., at the place of production than is used up, say, daily or weekly. The continuity of the process requires that the presence of its conditions should not be jeopardized by possible interruptions when making purchases daily, nor depend on whether the product is sold daily or weekly, and hence is reconvertible into its elements of production only irregularly. But it is evident that productive capital may be latent, or form a supply, in quite different proportions. There is, for instance, a great difference whether the spinning mill owner must have on hand a supply of cotton or coal for 3 months or for one. Patently, this supply, while increasing absolutely, may decrease relatively. This depends on various conditions, all of which practically amount to a demand for greater rapidity, regularity, and reliability in furnishing the necessary amount of raw material so that no interruption will ever occur. The less these conditions are complied with, hence the less rapid, regular, and reliable the supplies, the greater must be the latent part of the productive capital, that is to say, the supply of raw material, etc., in the hands of the producer waiting to be worked up. These conditions are inversely proportional to the degree of development of capitalist production, and hence of the productive power of social labour. The same applies, therefore, to the supply in this form. However, that which appears here as a decrease of the supply, for instance in Lala, is in part merely a decrease of the supply in the form of commodity capital, or of the commodity supply proper. It is consequently only a change of form of the same supply. If, for instance, the quantity of coal daily produced in a certain country, and therefore the scale and energy of operation of the coal industry, are great, the spinner does not need a large store of coal in order to ensure the continuity of his production. The steady and certain renewal of his coal supply makes this unnecessary. In the second place, the rapidity with which the product of one process may be transferred as means of production to another process depends on the development of the transport and communication facilities. The cheapness of transportation is of great importance in this question. The continually renewed transport of coal from the mine to the spinning mill, for instance, would be more expensive than the storing up of a larger supply of coal for a longer time when the price of transportation is relatively cheaper. These two circumstances, examined so far, arise from the process of production itself. In the third place, the development of the credit system also exerts an influence. The less the spinner is dependent on the direct sale of his yarn for the renewal of his supply of cotton, coal, etc., and this direct dependence will be the smaller the more developed the credit system is, the smaller relatively these supplies can be, and yet ensure a continuous production of yarn on a given scale, a production independent of the hazards of the sale of yarn. In the fourth place, however, many raw materials, semi-finished goods, etc., require long periods of time for their production. This applies especially to all raw materials furnished by agriculture. If no interruption of the process of production is to take place, a certain amount of raw materials must be on hand for the entire period in which no new products can take the place of the old. If this supply decreases in the hands of the industrial capitalist, it proves merely that it increases in the hands of the merchant in the form of commodity supply. The development of transportation, for instance, makes it possible rapidly to ship the cotton lying, say, in Liverpool's import warehouses to Manchester, so that the manufacturer can renew his supply in comparatively small portions as and when needed. But in that case, the cotton remains in so much larger quantities as commodity supply in the hands of the Liverpool merchants. It is therefore merely a change in the form of the supply, and this Lala and others overlooked. And if you consider the social capital, the same quantity of products exists in either case in the form of supply. The quantity required for a single country during the period of, say, 1 year, decreases as transportation improves. If a large number of sailing vessels and steamers ply between America and England, England's opportunities to renew its cotton supply are increased, while the average quantity to be held in storage in England decreases. The same effect is produced by the development of the world market and the consequent multiplications of the sources of supply of the same merchandise. The article is supplied piecemeal from various countries and at various intervals. Section 2b. The commodity supply proper. We have already seen that under capitalist production, the product assumes the general form of a commodity, and the more so, the more that production grows in size and depth. Consequently, even if production retains the same volume, the far greater part of the product exists in the shape of commodities, compared with either the former modes of production or the capitalist mode of production at a less developed stage. And every commodity, therefore, also every commodity capital, which is only commodities, but commodities serving as the form of existence of capital value, constitutes an element of the commodity supply, unless it passes immediately from its sphere of production into productive or individual consumption, that is, does not lie in the market in the interval. If the volume of production remains the same, the commodity supply, that is, this isolation and fixation of the commodity form of the product, grows therefore of itself concomitantly with capitalist production. We have seen previously that this is merely a change of form of the supply, that is to say, the supply in the form of commodities increases on the one hand, because, on the other, the supply in the form intended directly for production or consumption decreases. It is merely a changed social form of the supply. If, at the same time, it is not only the relative magnitude of the commodity supply compared with the aggregate social product that increases, but also its absolute magnitude, that is so because the mass of the aggregate product grows with the growth of capitalist production. With the development of capitalist production, the scale of production is determined less and less by the direct demand for the product, and more by the amount of capital available in the hands of the individual capitalist, by the urge of self-expansion inherent in his capital, and by the need of continuity and expansion of the process of production. Thus, in each particular branch of production, there is a necessary increase in the mass of products available in the market in the shape of commodities, that is, in search of buyers. The amount of capital fixed for a shorter or longer period in the form of commodity capital grows. Hence, the commodity supply also grows. Finally, the majority of the members of society are transformed into wage labourers, into people who live from hand to mouth, who receive their wages weekly and spend them daily, who therefore must have their means of subsistence made available to them in the shape of a supply. Although the separate elements of this supply may be in continuous flow, a part of them must always stagnate in order that the supply as a whole may remain in a state of flux. All these characteristics have their origin in the form of production and in the incidental change of form which the product must undergo in the process of circulation. Whatever may be the social form of the supply of products, its preservation requires outlays for buildings, vessels, etc., which are facilities for storing the product. Also, for means of production and labour, more or less of which must be expended according to the nature of the product in order to combat injurious influences. The more concentrated socially the supply is, the smaller relatively are the costs. These outlays always constitute a part of the social labour in either materialised or living form. Hence, in the capitalist form, outlays of capital, which do not enter into the formation of the product itself, and thus are deductions from the product. They are necessary, these unproductive expenses of social wealth. They are the costs of preserving the social product, regardless of whether its existence as an element of the commodity supply stems merely from the social form of production, hence from the commodity form and its necessary change of form, or whether we regard the commodity supply merely as a special form of the supply of products, which is common to all societies, although not in the form of a commodity supply, that is a form of product supply belonging in the process of circulation. It may now be asked, to what extent these costs enhance the value of commodities? If the capitalist has converted the capital advanced by him in the form of means of production and labour power into a product, into a definite quantity of commodities ready for sale, and these commodities remain in stock unsold, then we have a case of not only the stagnation of the process of self-expansion of his capital value during this period. The costs of preserving this supply in buildings, of additional labour, etc., mean a positive loss. The buyer, he would ultimately find, would laugh in his face if he were to say to him, "I could not sell my goods for 6 months, and their preservation during that period did not only keep so-and-so much of my capital idle, but also cost me so-and-so much extra expense." "Tant pis pour vous. Hard luck," the buyer would say. "Right here alongside of you is another seller whose wares were completed only the day before yesterday. Your articles are shop-worn, and probably more or less damaged by the ravages of time. Therefore you will have to sell cheaper than your competitor." The conditions under which a commodity exists are not in the least affected by whether its producer is the real producer or a capitalist producer, hence actually only a representative of the real producer. He has to turn his product into money. The expenses incurred by him because of the fixation of the product in the form of commodities are a part of his individual speculations, with which the buyer of the commodities has no concern. The latter does not pay him for the time of circulation of his commodities. Even when the capitalist keeps his goods intentionally off the market, in times of an actual or anticipated revolution of values, it depends on the advent of this revolution of values, on the correctness or incorrectness of his speculation, whether he will recover his additional costs or not. But the revolution in values does not ensue in consequence of his additional costs. Hence, insofar as the formation of a supply entails a stagnation of circulation, the expense incurred thereby does not add to the value of the commodities. On the other hand, there cannot be any supply without a stay in the sphere of circulation, without capital staying for a longer or shorter time in its commodity form. Hence, no supply without stagnation of circulation, just as no money can circulate without the formation of a money reserve. Hence, no commodity circulation without commodity supply. If the capitalist does not come face to face with this necessity in increased commodity to increased money, he will encounter it in money to commodity, if not with regard to his own commodity capital, then with regard to that of other capitalists, who produce means of production for him and means of subsistence for his labourers. Whether the formation of a supply is voluntary or involuntary, that is to say, whether the commodity producer keeps a supply intentionally, or whether his products form a supply in consequence of the sales resistance offered by the conditions of the process of circulation itself, cannot affect the matter essentially, it would seem. But for the solution of this problem, it is useful to know what distinguishes voluntary from involuntary supply formation. Involuntary formation arises from, or is identical with, a stagnation of the circulation which is independent of the knowledge of the commodity producer and thwarts his will. And what characterizes the voluntary formation of a supply? In both instances, the seller seeks to get rid of his commodity as fast as ever. He always offers his product for sale as a commodity. If he were to withdraw it from sale, it would be only a potential and not an actual element of the commodity supply. To him, the commodity as such is as much a depository of exchange value as ever, and as such can act only by and after, stripping off its commodity form and assuming the money form. The commodity supply must be of a certain volume in order to satisfy the demand during a given period. A continual extension of the circle of buyers is counted upon. For instance, in order to last for one day, a part of the commodities in the market must constantly remain in the commodity form while the remainder is fluent, turns into money. True, the part which stagnates while the rest is fluent decreases steadily, just as the size of the supply itself decreases until it is all sold. The stagnation of commodities thus counts as a requisite condition of their sale. The volume must furthermore be larger than the average sale or the average demand. Otherwise, the excess over these averages could not be satisfied. On the other hand, the supply must constantly be renewed because it is constantly being drawn on. This renewal cannot come from anywhere in the last instance except from production, from a supply of commodities. It is immaterial whether this comes from abroad or not. The renewal depends on the periods required by the commodities for their reproduction. The commodity supply must last the whole time. The fact that it does not remain in the hands of the original producer, but passes through various reservoirs, from the wholesaler to the retailer, changes merely the appearance and not the nature of the thing. From the point of view of society, a part of the capital retains, in both instances, the form of a commodity supply until the commodities enter productive or individual consumption. The producer tries to keep a stock corresponding to his average demand in order not to depend directly on production, and to ensure for himself a steady clientele. Purchase periods corresponding to the periods of production are formed, and the commodities constitute supplies for longer or shorter time, until they can be replaced by new commodities of the same kind. Constancy and continuity of the process of circulation, and therefore of the process of reproduction, which includes the process of circulation, are safeguarded only by the formation of such supplies. It must be remembered that increased commodity to increased money may have been transacted for the producer of commodity even if commodity is still in the market. If the producer were to keep his own commodities in stock until they are sold to the ultimate consumer, he would have to set two capitals in motion, one as the producer of the commodities and one as a merchant. As far as the commodity itself is concerned, whether we look upon it as an individual commodity or as a component part of social capital, it is immaterial whether the costs of forming the supply must be borne by its producer or by a series of merchants from A to Z. Since the commodity supply is nothing but the commodity form of the product, which at a particular level of social production would exist either as a productive supply, latent production fund, or as a consumption fund, reserve of means of consumption, if it did not exist as a commodity supply, the expenses required for its preservation, that is, the costs of supply formation, that is, materialized or living labor spent for this purpose, are merely expenses incurred for maintaining either the social fund for production or the social fund for consumption. The increase in the value of commodities caused by them distributes these costs simply pro rata over the different commodities, since the costs differ with different kinds of commodities. And the costs of supply formation are as much as ever deductions from the social wealth, although they constitute one of the conditions of its existence. Only to the extent that the commodity supply is a premise of commodity circulation and is itself a form necessarily arising in commodity circulation, only in so far as this apparent stagnation is therefore a form of the movement itself, just as the formation of a money reserve is a premise of money circulation, only to that extent is such stagnation normal. But as soon as the commodities lying in the reservoirs of circulation do not make room for the swiftly succeeding wave of production, so that the reservoirs become overstocked, the commodity supply expands in consequence of the stagnation in circulation, just as the hoards increase when money circulation is clogged. It does not make any difference whether this jam occurs in the warehouses of the industrial capitalist or in the storerooms of the merchant. The commodity supply is, in that case, not a prerequisite of uninterrupted sale, but a consequence of the impossibility of selling the goods. The costs are the same, but since they now arise purely out of the form, that is to say, out of the necessity of transforming the commodities into money, and out of the difficulty of going through this metamorphosis, they do not enter into the values of the commodities, but constitute deductions, losses of value, in the realization of the value. Since the normal and abnormal forms of the supply do not differ in form and both clog circulation, these phenomena may be confused and deceive the agent of production himself, so much the more since for the producer the process of circulation of his capital may continue, while that of his commodities which have changed hands and now belong to merchants may be arrested. If production and consumption swell, other things being equal, then the commodity supply swells likewise. It is renewed and absorbed just as fast, but its size is greater. Hence the bulging size of the commodity supply, for which stagnant circulation is responsible, may be mistaken for a symptom of the expansion of the process of reproduction, especially when the development of the credit system makes it possible to wrap the real movement in mystery. The costs of supply formation consist, one, of a quantitative diminution of the mass of the products, for instance, in the case of a flour supply, two, of a deterioration of quality, three, of the materialized and living labor required for the preservation of the supply.